Self-Evident is a platform that is dedicated to speaking truths that were once self-evident and doing so in love. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode. I know last Monday we said that in honor of Inauguration Day, we were not going to do an episode, but I honestly could not get through the week without talking about the inauguration because so much happened, so much good stuff happened, so much fun stuff happened, and I just have to cover it. So that's why we are giving you a middle of the week podcast, which is not the norm, but again, it's just necessary. So let's get into it. But before I get into our topics for the day, I want to tell you about an important event that is coming up in March that you do not want to miss, especially with the tide shifting in our country with people valuing families more. This worldview conference that Illinois Family Institute is putting on is more timely than ever. Our world is characterized by mostly having a negative view of marriage and family, viewing marriage as a trap, viewing children as holding you back from attaining your dreams. But this conference is going to put a stop to that false narrative. We are going to be joined by Dr. Brad Wilcox and Scott Phelps from the National Marriage Campaign, and they're going to be talking about why marriage and family is a high calling, why it is something to aspire to, why it is something that is fulfilling, why God designed our world to work in a certain way when it comes to getting married and having children and raising them right. Again, this is an event that you do not want to miss, especially if you are a young adult. This is so important to have our foundations rooted in truth when it comes to these topics. Go to illinoisfamily.org/events to find out more. That's illinoisfamily.org/events. Okay, so for today's topics, I wanted to start with a really fun one first, and that's the outfits. If there are any men watching or listening, you can totally fast forward this. I promise I will not spend a lot of time on this, but I just have to say what everyone is thinking of how beautiful our first and second lady are. I mean, my goodness, the style, the iconic fashion, we are going to be getting, us girls are going to be getting so many iconic fashion looks the next 4 years from both our first lady and our second lady, which arguably has never happened before. I've known or been aware of a first and second lady that both of them have such a keen, iconic fashion sense. I just don't know if there's anyone else that I've seen or been told of or heard of that matches Melania Trump and Yusha Vance. So Melania Trump's outfits and Yusha Vance's outfits got traction in the news. The BBC actually posted a fashion article a little bit ago. Quote, Melania Trump kicked off Inauguration Day with an outfit that has all the hallmarks of her favorite first lady style, sharply cut with spiked heels and a dramatic flourish via the headgear. It is simultaneously serious and chic. And I could not agree more. The only critique that I have of Melania Trump's outfit with her hat was that I could not see her eyes. And I know that that is the style of the hat. And I am not saying in any way that she was any less beautiful, any less more chic or stylish. I just think it would have been nice to see her eyes. And if you were watching the inauguration, you saw that little awkward moment where President Trump went in for the kiss, but then her hat was blocking him. So it was just kind of an awkward exchange. Both of them handled it with grace and poise. But again, the hat caused a few problems on Inauguration Day. But that's okay because, again, didn't make her any less beautiful. It was part of the fashion style and she rocked it. She also made, according to this article, an equally dramatic appearance at the first inaugural ball wearing a full-length gown with a thick black ribbon-like strip echoed in a choker-style necklace. From a distance, the inky squiggle could easily remind viewers of the signature that Melania's husband had earlier signed on a flurry of executive orders. And I just found that take to be really cool, that it seems as though Melania and her husband are really taking strides to show our country that they really are a team, that they are the dream couple when it comes to running our country. And again, just iconic fashion, stunning. If you follow the Conservatoire on Instagram or Facebook, you will be seeing all the outfits that have been posted. And it's just so fun to look at. And her black and white gown that matched the tuxedo on her first dance, it was just stunning. And it's not just Melania, it's Yusha Vance as well. She is so stylish, so put together, so beautiful. And again, it's just going to be so fun watching all the outfit trends that are going to be popping up over the next 4 years, all the outfit inspiration that they are going to be doing. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, now it's time to actually get into the part of the episode that matters. Now, I will say, fashion is fun, and I think that this kind of fashion actually does matter in a way, and I'll just get on a soapbox for a little bit, because if you remember back in 2016 with President Trump's first term, Melania was really dragged through the ringer when it came to fashion. She was not consulted or allowed to be on Vogue magazine, which Vogue has always done a piece on the First Lady. So it's going to be interesting to see how the fashion industry changes toward accepting the Trump family, towards not being so vitriolic in their bias against Republicans, etc. The next 4 years are going to be really amazing for people just kind of taking a breath and allowing fashion to just be fashion. And it's going to be great. Okay, off my soapbox. If you're like me, there were so many executive orders that were signed that you kind of got lost in the weeds. And I'm not going to take all of your time to go through every single one that was signed. What I am going to do, though, is I'm just going to give a brief rundown on the ones that I think are most important and a couple that were confusing to me personally until I looked into them more. So, for example, the flags fly full staff on Inauguration Day. I did not understand why that was an executive order or why that mattered. However, an article from the Washington Stand, which obviously everything I source, I will link below so that you can see where I'm getting my information from. So this executive order, quote, "The first order the president signed impacted his own inauguration. President Biden had signed an executive order that all flags be flown at half-mast for 30 days following the death of former President Jimmy Carter. That would make it appear, however, that the nation greeted the changing presidency in a state of mourning." So that is why an executive order was administered that on an inauguration day, all flags are to be flown at full mast, which again, I didn't know what the significance was, but once it was explained to me, it makes complete sense. We do not want to give the impression as a nation that we are mourning the inauguration of President Trump, because if you saw from the election results, that is far from the truth. In fact, most of the nation is in celebration right now. Another executive order that is worth noting is his executive order that repealed 78 Biden executive orders. So among some other things in this specific revoking, the big ones included, quote, "eliminated the Office of Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships, the White House Gender Policy Council, the Interagency Task Force on the Reunification of Families, the Presidential Commission on the Supreme Court of the United States, the Climate Change Support Office, and the United States Council on Transnational Organized Crime." And from what I've been seeing, it's just getting rid of some extra waste that the government has put money and time and people into that are unnecessary for the work of the government. So that's what that one is. Then it also ended policies forbidding oil drilling on the continental shelf. Again, if you watch President Trump's speech, he promised that on his first day, he was going to order people to drill and drill. And that's what that one did. He ended the electric vehicle mandate and placed Cuba back on the list of state sponsors of terrorism. All right, then the next ones that he signed were ending the birthright citizenship. And this one is receiving a lot of backlash, and I'll tell you why. The order, quote, this is from The Guardian, "along with a slew of immigration-focused orders, Trump is targeting automatic citizenship for U.S.-born children of immigrants in the country illegally to begin 30 days from today." So why this is important and why I am in favor of this executive order is that for many, many years, women who came illegally, who were pregnant, would purposefully have their babies in the United States. And because they had their babies on United States soil, it automatically granted citizenship to that baby, which is why they're called anchor babies. So then it was much more difficult, as you can imagine, to deport the woman, because then you would be separating a woman from her baby. So it created a lot of tension in the law, a lot of tension with immigration policies, a lot of tension with ICE, because you had a lot of women doing this. So what this executive order is aiming to do is saying, no, the birthright citizenship applies to American citizens. So for example, I'm 20 weeks pregnant. When I give birth to my baby, because I am a United States legal citizen, my baby will be a United States citizen. That is what the birthright citizenship was originally designed to do, so that babies who are born to citizens would automatically be given citizenship to avoid paperwork, to avoid confusion, which is why babies are also given social security numbers when they're born. They're automatically an American, and that's great. And it's not meant for illegal immigrants. It's unfortunate that this is a controversial executive order. However, I see where some tension can be in the 14th Amendment with what the 14th Amendment allows. The Guardian is talking about how there's already been a lawsuit against the Trump administration for this specific executive order. So we will see how that all pans out. All right, next, one of the really big ones, I will say, was the executive order of leaving the World Health Organization. And boy, did I cheer when I heard this quote. This is what Trump said. World Health ripped us off. Everybody rips off the United States. It's not going to happen anymore. He accused, this is after the quote, of course, he accused the WHO of mishandling the COVID-19 pandemic and other international health crises, which is absolutely true. COVID-19 was blown up into proportions that it never should have been. People lost their jobs, people lost their homes, people lost their livelihoods, people lost their freedom over this quote-unquote pandemic. And the way the WHO handled it, the way Fauci handled it, the way other administrative policies handled it were completely false scientifically and damaging to people, both emotionally, financially, spiritually, economically, in any type of way. So yes, withdrawing from the WHO, which is an evil organization, in my opinion, is a huge win for the United States. All right, the next order that he signed was revoking electric vehicle targets. So what this order is, quote, Trump revoked a non-binding executive order signed by Biden aimed at making half of all new vehicles sold in 2030 electric. The problem with Biden's executive order is mandating electric vehicle policies that people are not ready for. I have no doubt that by 2050 or 2060, whenever, the world will naturally gravitate towards electric as the technology gets better and better. However, you cannot force that on people. You cannot force a market's hand. It does not work economically in the long run. Markets have to be created organically, or in the capitalism mind, by supply and demand. The world will shift electrically when electric is actually better than gas. And what we see with a lot of these brands, and I'm actually not talking about Tesla. Tesla has shown itself to be very spectacular when it comes to handling electric. I'm talking about other brands like Toyota and Hyundai, that their electric vehicles have a lot of problems. The world is not ready for electric vehicles, and forcing this on the market is going to create a lot of car issues and a lot of financial issues for people. The car companies themselves are going to be struggling to keep up with this mandate, and it doesn't work. So Trump revoked that. Again, a huge win for car companies. I'm sure car companies all over the United States that manufacture in the United States are very happy with that one. Okay, the next one, again, this is another controversial executive order that he signed. This one reclassifies federal employees, making them easier to fire. And I know how that sounds right off the bat. It does sound bad. It sounds very mean and taking privileges away from employees that have been working so hard, etc. But what this is, from the research that I have done, is this that this is specifically for political hires that Biden made that were unnecessary or were used in ways that were not acceptable for normal government policy or were not needed, just extra waste. Again, this is kind of in line with the Department of Government Efficiency, which was just started, which Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy are a part of. It's aiming to cut back waste. So when they go in and they see that we have a bunch of federal employees that have been hired that don't make sense, political hires only for other policy things that were revoked by revoking Biden's executive orders, they're not needed anymore. It just makes them easier to fire. And that's okay. And that's okay because our taxpayer dollars are paying their salaries. And I personally do not want to pay for someone who their job does not mean anything, their job is not necessary, etc. I'm all in favor of cutting back government waste when it comes to spending my hard-earned taxpayer dollars. Okay, the next one was declaring a national energy emergency. This order, according to The Guardian, quote, Trump declared a national energy emergency as part of a barrage of pro-fossil fuel actions and efforts to unleash already booming U.S. energy production that included also rolling back restrictions in drilling in Alaska and undoing a pause on gas exports. If you watched his inauguration address speech, you will have heard the iconic comment of, we are going to drill, baby, drill. And boy, he is not lying. Yes, United States has every right and every ability to be completely autonomous when it comes to our energy supply, when it comes to our fossil fuel output. There is no reason for us to be outsourcing that. There is no reason for us to take away American jobs from drilling that comes with that as well. It is an economic waste to not benefit from the resources that American soil has. A huge win. And I don't see why this should be controversial. I think it's just common sense. All right. This one, I think, might be one of the biggest. Quote, creating a policy recognizing only two genders. According to The Guardian, Trump signed an order to remove gender ideology guidance from federal government communication policies and forms. The order makes it official policy that there are only two genders, male and female. This is what Trump said. He said, quote, agencies will cease pretending that men can be women and women can be men when enforcing laws that protect against sex discrimination. Amazing win. Again, this is not controversial. There are only two genders, male and female. XY chromosomes, XX chromosomes. If you follow me on Instagram or follow Self Evident on Instagram, you will have seen that I posted a reaction video talking about this trans individual who thinks he's a woman, explaining how the ultrasound was false in what it labeled him as. And I'm telling him and audience that no, it was not false. Next one, pausing the TikTok ban. I'm not on TikTok. I'm one of those Gen Z people that actually hates TikTok. I believe in Instagram Reels. I know it's TikTok 2 weeks later, technically. I'm fine with waiting the 2 weeks or however long it takes for TikTok content to be put on Instagram. I honestly hate TikTok. I believe the reports that say that certain content is specifically targeted in TikTok towards young people, transgender content, sexual distortion content, etc. So I just didn't want to be on the app because TikTok does have a reputation of being more targeting. When the TikTok ban was put in order, I wasn't too mad about it. I understand that a lot of people have it as their livelihoods, etc., but it wasn't affecting my life. However, I do agree that the CCP is the problem, not the TikTok app. So I appreciated when Trump signed an executive order to temporarily delay the enforcement of the TikTok ban in favor of more negotiation. I think that that is great. I think that that is a win for everyone, especially the TikTok fans, especially the people like small businesses and content creators that make their living, part of their living off of having a TikTok account. I understand that that's a financial help for a lot of people. So I appreciate that he did that. I think that was the right decision. And then the next one he did, and I think this is one of the biggest next to recognizing only two genders, was that he declared a national border emergency. According to The Guardian, quote, Trump signed an order at the White House declaring an emergency at the southern U.S. border, along with several other immigration-related policies. And this is what he said, quote, all illegal entry will immediately be halted and we will begin the process of returning millions and millions of criminal aliens back to the places from which they came. Again, a win for safety in our communities, a win for common sense, in my opinion. People who do not belong here should not stay here. It's really that simple. Lake and Riley's death was 100% preventable. Under Biden's policies, Laken Riley's killer was actually flown to her. And that should really sink in for us of how dangerous these policies are, how evil they are. And so, yes, people who do not belong here should not stay here. And we as Christians actually have a right to demand that. I cannot love my neighbor and also support the unmitigated, unvetted allowance of illegals into my community, around my children, around my family. No. That's not what God calls me to do. He doesn't call me to blindly accept all people regardless of the safety that they bring. And if you recall an episode I did previously, I actually read a theological perspective of illegal immigration, and it noted that nowhere in scripture does a government not have the right to enforce walls, to enforce boundaries? In fact, God gave Israel boundaries. If you read the book of Numbers, and even if you read the book of Ezekiel, boundaries and walls and territory are good things. They're things that God gave his people to protect them, to delineate them from the nations. And so people who don't abide by that are actually breaking the law, and breaking a government's law, according to Romans 13, is actually a sin. So in a roundabout way, actually in a direct way, illegal immigration is a sin. So we as Christians have every right to demand that our communities, our homes, our children are kept safe from people who do not belong here, from people who are breaking the law. Okay, the next one, issuing pardons for January 6 defendants. If you remember, January 6 of 2021, according to many leftists, was the darkest day in American history. So dramatic. But in a very real sense, it was one of the darkest days for many people who were still held in confinement. This is what Trump said. I'm going to be signing on the J6 hostages pardons to get them out. We'll be signing pardons for a lot of people. And he actually pardoned about 1,500 defendants charged in the January 6 attack on the U.S. Capitol. And he actually pardoned 1,500 defendants charged for January 6. Again, a huge win. These people have been held for 4.5, 5 years. So I'm so thankful to the Lord that he placed this executive order on Trump's heart and that he signed it to get these people justice and freedom that they deserve. Okay, next one before I tell you the last one, which was the most confusing for me. Okay, the next one, withdrawing from the Paris Climate Agreement. Quote, Trump issued executive action withdrawing the U.S. from the 2015 Paris Agreement, along with a letter informing the United Nations of the decision. He also said that he is taking action to end the Green New Deal. Again, another win for the ripoff, according to Trump, that was the Paris Climate Accord, the Green New Deal, all that stuff, just complete hogwash. So thankful that we are done with that. Okay, this last executive order was called the cost of living crisis. And if you're like me, you were a little hesitant about this because it seems so vague. And I wanted to make sure that it wasn't a price capping on things. Because again, if you go back and listen to our other episodes, you'll hear me explain price capping and how that was done in Venezuela. It's a socialist concept of putting a price ceiling on products, which actually hurts the economy, breaks up supply and demand so that there are shortages, etc. You want to go back, I can link that below. So I was a little nervous when I heard this, because I'm thinking, okay, I agree that we have a cost of living crisis, but how is this going to be fixed? Well, you'll be very happy to know that after I explain this, it's actually great. It's actually great. So the White House released a press document that explains this executive order. And I'll just read the last paragraph because it is kind of lengthy. Quote, I hereby order the heads of all executive departments and agencies to deliver emergency price relief consistent with applicable law to the American people and increase the prosperity of the American worker. This shall include pursuing appropriate actions to lowering the cost of housing and expanding housing supply, eliminating unnecessary administrative expenses and rent-seeking practices that increase healthcare costs, eliminating counterproductive requirements that raise the cost of home appliances, create employment opportunities for American workers, including drawing discouraged workers into the labor force, eliminating harmful, coercive climate policies that increase the cost of food and fuel. Within 30 days of the date of this memorandum, the assistant to the president for economic policy shall report to me, and every 30 days thereafter. So basically what this crisis executive order did is it's just trying to eliminate unnecessary red tape that higher the cost of our basic products, of home appliances, of healthcare, etc. And it's just doing a preliminary way of making things more affordable before real economic change can start to be seen by drilling, by getting more oil in our reserves, etc. So this is just a preliminary action of trying to relieve some of the stress. So this is just some of the preliminary steps that President Trump is taking to give relief, financial relief to the normal everyday American. So those were the main executive orders that I wanted to go through. Again, the flag raising one and the crisis of living one, those were the ones that were more confusing to me, so that's why I wanted to address them in case they were confusing to you as well. So yeah, we are going to have an amazing next 4 years. I cannot wait to see how the Lord uses President Trump. I pray for his protection and his wisdom, and I pray that we just have an amazing reprieve and that we don't stop fighting, though, that we keep fighting for biblical values in the public square, in our homes, in our schools, in our communities. All right, until next time, let us firmly rely on the protection of divine providence. This is Self-Evident.